This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Milers, to another episode of Mickey Miles and More. I'm Chris Eliopoulos, and this will be the first of who knows how many episodes where I'll be reviewing Disney World attractions. In essence, this will be my personal Yelp review done in an A to E Disney ticket scale. Today's review is It's a Small World. It's a Small World is located in Fantasyland, but I'd suggest that it might also belong in Tomorrowland. Originally premiering at the 1964 World's Fair, the attraction relocated to Disneyland and opened on May 28, 1966. To quote Disney's description, they refer to it as the happiest cruise that ever sailed. Now, if you know me, I have a rather large disgust at the thought of cruises. All those people stuck in one space, scheduled meals, odd entertainment choices, and the germs. Oh, the germs. I'm a germaphobe from before the pandemic, and I always thought of cruises as petri dishes on the ocean. But I digress. The description goes on to invite you to voyage along the Seven Seaways Canal and behold a cast of almost 300 audio animatronic dolls representing children from every corner of the globe as they sing the classic anthem to world peace in their native languages. That anthem. Oh, that anthem. It's become a running joke that the It's a Small World song is an earworm you just can't shake. You can't. I played the song at the top of this episode, and we all know we're all going to be humming that dang thing for the rest of the day. Maybe even the rest of the week. Richard and Robert Sherman, the Sherman brothers, wrote the song in the wake of the Cuban Missile Crisis. It was originally a slow ballad, but Walt Disney, the man, not the parks, wanted it more upbeat. They sang the song in counterpoint, which is a musical term, which is a compositional technique in which two or more melodic lines complement each other but act independently. Another example is one of my favorites, the Star Wars main theme. The brass instruments play the melody, and the cellos, basses, and percussion play something different, but they all work together. Now I'm humming that tune as well. Again, I digress. According to Disney's website, again, amid vibrant backdrops, you'll travel through country after country, and by journey's end, you'll see that it really is a small world after all. So, why do I think the attraction could also fit in Tomorrowland? Think of its beginnings. The attraction was first created for the World's Fair, a place where people from all over the globe come together to share the new and the exciting, all in a gathering of brotherhood. It was an attraction built for UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, an agency responsible for aid to children worldwide. The goal was to see the world as a whole, that we all share this planet and need to work together for each other. UNICEF, in essence, is Star Trek. Well, the idea of Star Trek, that we as a world come together no matter what country you're from, what economic status you have, what color your skin is, and we work together in peace and collective betterment. It's a Small World is a celebration of the idea of globalism. In the midst of the Vietnam War, civil unrest, and leaders being assassinated, this seemingly nostalgic attraction was really a political statement that, before the internet, speedy international travel, and the interconnectedness that we see today, Disney was looking to the future to say we're all one species, no matter what you look like or where you're from. Okay, more digression, sorry. When I was little and Halloween approached, I would receive these orange cardboard boxes that said Trick or Treat for the World's Children on the top, a silhouette of a mother holding a child between olive branches, and UNICEF written below. At the top was a slot to collect pennies. Much like the vaccines I received, they were handed out in school. They'd come flat and you'd have to fold them together. Then I'd put on my cheap costume. They were always the cheapest. My mother always looked to save money, so we'd buy our costumes at the last minute when they were on sale. But by that point, the selection was, how should I say, wanting. I'd end up being a gypsy or an elephant while my friends got to be Batman or a witch or the Fonz. But we'd all have the plastic pumpkins and the UNICEF boxes. That first Halloween, I went to each house, got a piece of candy, then I'd hold out my UNICEF box and the person would put in a penny, or sometimes even a nickel, and then I'd march to the next house and repeat the process. I thought that this was the best. I was getting candy and money for a new toy. That is, until I got home and my mother explained, I didn't get to keep the money. Those pennies went to help the children of the world. What a ripoff. When I was young, I was lucky enough to go to Disneyland just about every year. My father worked for American Airlines, so we'd get to fly for free. My aunt lived near Anaheim, so we'd stay with her and then go to Disneyland. I went in the time when they still had tickets to ride. No fast passes, no Genie Plus, just a book of tickets that went from A to E. The E tickets were the coolest rides. Whenever you did something cool, it was always an E-ticket ride. Remember that? We'd always say, that was an E-ticket ride. Well, those rides were also the most expensive. So my parents would always steer us towards the less intense attractions. Like, well, you guessed it, It's a Small World. Although, the Small World was an E-ticket ride. My mother is and always has been an information junkie. So we approached that big clock facade designed by the great Mary Blair for the first time. My mother explained that this ride was originally created for UNICEF, the folks who give out those orange boxes at Halloween. It was then that I realized that all those pennies I raised went to build this ride. So why did I have to pay to go on? Didn't I already give them my money? My mother tried to explain further, but I wasn't having it. As we got onto the boats, I looked into the water and saw pennies just sitting there. All those pennies I collected, and they just dumped them in the water. Ungrateful jerks. Anyway, in a future episode, I'll be talking about Carousel of Progress, another attraction that first appeared at the 1964 World's Fair. But I think that those two attractions are something that Disney parks never claimed to be. Political. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow just a day away. Both attractions look towards a more hopeful and inclusive world where we all work together. Like I said, in 1966, it was tough to see a world where we all live and work together in peace. Remember, we were just 20 years on from World War II. Many people lived through that, the Korean War, and then the Vietnam War. The sad part is we haven't grown much from that time either. In an age where nationalism has borne new fruit, where selfishness and greed still grow like ivy choking a tree, attractions like A Small World are a beacon of light in an ever-toxic world. People complain that the Hall of Presidents, another future episode, whitewashes our history, and they're right. They also say that the parks are all just fantasy land, a place where, for a brief time, we can forget the real world and live in this made-up fantasy of how we think the world should be. And I get it. But if you look closely, especially at those early attractions, Walt and his team were also subtly sneaking in political statements couched in a silly little boat ride. The year after we were married, I took my wife to Disney World. She had never been to a Disney park in her entire life, and I wanted to show her what it was all about. On our first day at the Magic Kingdom, we got up early, went to the Magic Kingdom, and followed the rope drop to the hub. When the rope did indeed drop, people went to Splash Mountain, Space Mountain, or any of the other big attractions. Me? I took my wife to It's a Small World. She got on the boat, we set sail on that happy cruise, saw all the figures dressed in traditional costumes from around the world, listened to that song over and over, went through the room saying goodbye in multiple languages. And as we exited the boat, I noticed something on my wife's face that she didn't have when we first got on. A smile. She looked at me and said, "I get it now. Now I know why you love this place." And we have gone to Disney World every year since. I was going to cynically end this review saying that based on the way the world is today, the rise of nationalism, the racism, the hate, the climate change in action, the intolerance, that perhaps having a small world in Fantasyland is right, because an attraction that see us someday coming together as one is a fantasy. But I choose to see the world in our future where we do act like children. Those children in the attraction who don't judge each other based on where they're from, who come together as one and realize that it's only when we work together on this starship we call Earth that we will truly be a small world. While originally an E-ticket attraction, I give it a D-ticket because I can't get that song out of my head. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes, be sure to reach out to us on Twitter at Mickey Miles Pod. For Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean, Mike Scopa, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.